I worry sometimes about people who are not regular churchgoers dropping into services, particularly when they come on days like today when we hear two extremely strange stories about Moses coming down from Mount Sinai where he's met with God with his face shining and making his people afraid because of it. And then in the Gospel, the equally strange story of Jesus' transfiguration. And again, we have someone appearing to shine. Moses and Elijah also appear. You could excuse such people thinking, if this is what Christians believe, they must be out of their tiny minds. The modern mindset might want to put these stories in the realms of science fiction, stories which are rooted in the imagination rather than in fact. But of course, the writers of Genesis and the Gospels didn't have such a category of writing. They either wrote stories or factual accounts. So these stories must have been either as one or the other. And indeed, they have been read in both ways by good, godly people. For myself, I can't see why they shouldn't be taken as fact. Just think for a moment, we sometimes hear people who are extremely excited or happy about something, that their face lights up when they talk about it. There is a shining quality of face that we've all seen in people at special moments. The talk of brides looking radiant on their wedding day is a legitimate way of expressing how they sometimes look. Now, if a bride can be radiant, is it so surprising that Moses was absolutely shining after the only time we hear about when a man and God meet face to face? And the point of Jesus taking Peter, James and John with him on the mountain was to show them the fact that there was more to him than they had so far realised. They'd understood so much, but there was still more to be discovered. So they see and hear things which shatter their small picture of Jesus. They see him shining. They see his glory, very important biblical word. It's no coincidence that these stories have similarities. God as light is a common theme. Think of light from light in the Creed, or God of God, light from light in Come All Ye Faithful. Some of the books of our own day in which people have described near-death experiences have almost uniformly talked of being aware of a great and wonderful light. These are not stories of the imagination, but attempts, albeit rough and ready attempts, to describe a reality. But it raises the huge question of what we understand by truth. And maybe we make things more difficult for ourselves by the ongoing, irritating Christian habit of allowing superstitions to creep in round the edges of our faith. And when superstition comes in, faith goes out. For example, there are plenty of superstitions associated with baptism. I recall our first child, we were told, would never come on until she had been done. And a Methodist colleague told me that he'd found someone pinching a baby at a baptism to ensure that they cried, because otherwise they wouldn't know that the baptism had made the devil come out of the baby. And this was in the 20th century, not the Middle Ages. It's the same at weddings. Lucky charms are often around. Horseshoes are supposed to be lucky, or chimney sweeps, harder to get hold of these days. Perhaps that explains why more marriages fail. Bridesmaids have their origins in superstition. The theory is that the devil would want to spoil things for the bride, so the bride had decoys dressed just like it, so the devil wouldn't know which was the real one. Even Holy Communion has had superstitions attached to it. In the service, we say the words, "This is my body," over the bread. In the Middle Ages, those were seen as the magic words that made the bread into Christ's body. Those very words began a magic spell. I don't have any real claims to fame, but I think I was the first person to celebrate the Serum Rite Requiem Mass in Salisbury Cathedral since the Reformation. Maybe I'm the only one. And that was done with the express permission of the then Bishop of Salisbury. That service, of course, was in Latin. So I said in the Eucharistic prayer, not "this is my body," but "hoc est corpus meum," "this is my body." And it's from those words that we get the expression hocus pocus, superstition reigns. Jesus said that he was the truth, and that knowing the truth will set us free. In the New Testament reading, Paul says it's by open statement of the truth that we commend ourselves to the conscience of everyone. It's a fact that people are often enslaved. They are not free when they don't have the truth. That's the problem with superstitions. If you're superstitious, then you live life as if things which are not true are true. Paul talked about people being enslaved to superstitions, to what he called the elemental spirits of the universe. If you avoid walking under ladders, that might be very sensible in that you might dislodge the person painting at the top of them and get paint on your head. But it's not sensible to avoid walking under ladders because doing so will bring bad luck. Some people are particularly prone to superstitions, actors, for example. I remember having it drummed into me when I was in the school plays that you never said the tag, the very last line of a play, until the first night. If you did, it would bring bad luck. And of course, actors will never refer to Shakespeare's Macbeth because it's unlucky. They always talk about the Scottish play. They're living as if something is true, which is not true. I believe we need to do two things and learn to do them very young. The first is to have our feet firmly on the ground when we try to think about religion, about Jesus, about God. We're entitled to ask the most searching questions about everything. So something that appears at first superstitious or magical, supernatural, may turn out to be very matter of fact. We need to be humble enough to say we don't know it all. When we can't explain something, we don't have to assume that it is therefore supernatural and magic. It may simply be we don't yet know enough. We keep on discovering new things in science. But in fact, they're not new. They're just new to us. Let me give you a very famous example. One of the most important medicines of the last century has been penicillin. It's a mold that was first noticed by a Swedish scientist on some hyssop. And when Sir Alexander Fleming noticed that this mold killed bacteria, being a good Christian, his mind went back to the words in Psalm 51, which no doubt we'll be using on Ash Wednesday. Purge me with hyssop and I shall be clean. Thousands of years ago, they used hyssop as a medicine. They were in fact probably using penicillin. The magic of the healing was actually totally scientific, but they hadn't found that out yet. The disciples in the story didn't yet know everything about Jesus. And what happened in that story opened their eyes to what they hadn't yet understood. They knew how ordinary Jesus was. They spent day after day with him. But they also needed to see beyond that, to see who he really was. There's a famous story of the conductor Sir Thomas Beecham seeing a woman he was sure he knew in the Midland Hotel in Manchester after a concert. He chatted with her about this and that and then inquired after her husband, how he was. Was he doing the same job? And the woman replied very sweetly that he was very well and was still king. Beecham knew that he knew her, but he hadn't grasped who she was. They knew Jesus, but they had yet to grasp who he was. The events on the mountain opened their eyes. There are many children who put belief in God in the same category as belief in fairies, maybe because that's the way they've heard adults talk. So when one gets discarded, so does the other. But to quote the title of an American book of prayers from the hippie era 50 years ago, God is for real man. He is not part of science fiction or any other kind of fiction. And when we come to the limits of what our minds can cope with, we can go on worshipping with our hearts. We keep our feet on the ground, but allow our eyes to be open to what is not earthbound. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy, to quote Shakespeare. Or to quote some favourite lines of mine from Elizabeth Barrett Browning, every common bush is afire with God, but only those who see take off their shoes. The rest sit round and pluck blackberries. May we be delivered from any superstitions that tarnish our faith. May God open our eyes to what is not obvious, to the truths which science goes on revealing to us, and let's be amazed by them. But may we also be amazed by the truths that can only come from openness to God. With such amazement, we can aspire, as Paul asked of us in the New Testament reading, to reflect the glory that we have seen in how we live. As we sometimes sing in the hymn, as we gaze at your kingly brightness, so our faces display your likeness, ever changing from glory to glory, mirrored here, may our lives tell your story. May that be true for every one of us.